This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
All right, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here again with Eric Dahl.
Hey.
Back to you, Eric. So Eric and I are here recording just after the close on, Friday, May 12th. It's just about halfway through the second quarter of 2023. Hopefully everyone enjoyed their Cinco de Mayo last week. I know Mr. Mayberry, you know, Eric, you're here covering for Mr. Mayberry, but I see him supporting us on the Twitter spaces. He's got his little Captain America outfit on someone there. So welcome Mr. Mayberry as well, who is struggling with a hoarse throat there. So we didn't want to put him too much under duress with having to speak through the next 30 minutes or so. But with that, I'll go ahead and kick us off with the where we are in terms of what the market did this past week. In terms of the S&P 500, the S&P 500 is down a quarter point on the week-to-date basis, still up 8% on the year-to-date. Earlier, coming into the close, it looked like we were just going to have one positive performer in the form of the communications sector, which is up 2.25 points on the week-to-date basis. But it looks like consumer discretionary snuck in. Must have rallied pretty strongly because it's now up 43 basis points on the week-to-date basis as well. Every other sector, the remaining nine, are all in the red. Leading the way down are materials and energy, both down about 2%, 2 percentage points there. Moving over to the fixed income side of things, on the U.S. Treasury curve, looks like the two-year Treasury note yield wasn't able to close with a four handle here, but it just shy of it. It's at 3.99% on the close. In terms of the yield, it's up 8 basis points. For the 10-year, it's up 3 basis points on the yield this week to close at 3.46%. Long bond up 3 basis points to close with a yield of 3.78%. So kindred spirit here with the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate to the S&P 500, both down about a quarter point this week on the broad basket of fixed income securities. And it's pretty much red across the board on all the sectors that we look at for the fixed income market. Leading the way down is high yield corporate credit, down about 50 basis points. Everything else is down about 25 basis points or so, including treasuries, IG corporate credit. Agency MBS down a little bit more, down about 35 basis points, but EM and bank loans both down also about a quarter point or so. But on the year-to-date basis, a much different picture. Everything is green. The ag is still up 3.5% on the year through May 12th. Each one of the sectors that we just outlined there are also positive, with the worst performer still eking out a positive 2.5% for the year-to-date basis, and that comes in the form of the emerging market sovereign debt. Moving over to commodities here, commodities, just like the other two broad indices there, also finished the week in the red. It's down about 1.5 points for the Bloomberg Commodity Index. But unlike the others, commodities, I mean, it's still being weighed down by just the negative sentiment around expectations around not only growth here in the U.S., but globally as well. So when I look at it across each of the windows of time that I have here, you know, as I mentioned, down about 1.5 points on a week-to-date basis. It's down about 3% month-to-date, down about 3.5% quarter-to-date, and down over 8.5% year-to-date. So commodities really struggling in this backdrop of potential or of the headwinds of the macroeconomic data that we've been talking about on Monday Morning Minutes here. But digging in, looks like WTI crude oil futures on the front month basis, they managed to just eke out a dollar price just in the $70 handle here. It's $70.09 for a barrel of front month crude oil futures on the WTI basis. Looking at gold, gold is pretty much the only thing that's trying to keep commodities from going even more negative here. Gold is up 10.5% on a year-to-date basis, but it did close the week negative, down about half a point. It did remain above the $2,000 a troy ounce, though, closing the week here at $2,000.16, and a little bit of change there for the week. And then to wrap it all up, Bitcoin closed down over 10%. I say close, as I often do, making that mistake, as this market trades 24 hours a day. So every day of the week. So there is no close, but at the point of this reporting, it is down 10.5%, just about $26,500 a Bitcoin, but still up 60% or so on the year. So with that wrap up, Dahl, do you want to kick us off on what happened in this past week for Macroland?
Let's get into the macro after that tail of the tape. On Monday, May 8th, we had wholesale inventories come out, the March final. The print was at 0%. So that kind of was a little lower than the estimate of 0.1%. We also had the wholesale trade sales for month over month come in at minus 2.1%, which was a big miss versus the estimate. The estimate was 0.4%, so it missed by 2.5%. I think that's kind of a slightly bearish print. On Tuesday, we had the NFIB small business optimism for April come out at 89.0, which was a miss from the estimate of 0.7. And that was really another miss and the lowest print since January 2013. And that's the 16th consecutive month where the survey is below the 49-year average of 98. So kind of a miss there. I think the three most important data points of the week were the inflation information that came out on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So we'll get into that with CPI on Wednesday. And CPI, big picture, the report came in line with expectations. The month-over-month data for April came in at 0.4%, which is still elevated. The CPI ex food and energy for April came in once again at 0.4%, in line with expectations and still elevated, well above the Fed's goals. That left the year-over-year numbers at 4.9% on the headline, which was a decline of 0.1% from the estimate. And the CPI ex food and energy year-over-year for April came in at 5.5%. Once again, not a pretty number, with the services component, which is driving it, still very sticky. So a lot of wood to chop for the Fed there, and in line with market estimates, but not really what you could say are victorious numbers for the Federal Reserve. On Thursday, we got the initial jobless claims for the week ending May 6th, which came in a little higher than the estimate, 264,000. Which 19,000 higher. Is this the steady drift up? I think this is something to watch next week, but that was the print. We got continuing claims as well, came in at 1.8 million, 7,000 below the estimate. So that's pretty much resting steady, 1.8 million handle for the last 8 weeks. Thursday, we got PPI, which was, let's say, positive from the Fed's inflation fighting story. So the PPI final demand month over month for April came in at 0.2%, which was a decline of 0.1% from the estimate. The core PPI, ex food and energy, month over month came in at 0.2% as well. And that left the year over year number for April at 2.3% headline. And core year-over-year number came in at 3.2%. And I think kind of digging into those numbers a little bit, you can say that that was a pretty good set of prints. I mean, there's still wood to chop, but that headline PPI at sub 2.5, I think that that's a positive indicator. If you look at the correlations between PPI and CPI, I mean, there's some lags there and it's not perfect, but definitely the trend is the direction the Fed wants when it came to that indicator. Then on Friday, we got the import price data, which we like to look at Double Line because there's no hedonic adjustments. There's no kind of massaging of the data set to make it fit the narrative you want. And the import price index month over month for April came in at 0.4%. And that left the year over year number at minus 4.8%. And I think that that trajectory really might be bottoming out if you dig into the data. But that said, it's still at a good trend as far as the inflation fight goes. Unfortunately, on Friday, we also got some mixed data because the University of Michigan sentiment data came out. And I would say that was a pretty bearish report. The May prelim data came out at 57.7, which was a big miss from the estimate of 63. And so this kind of malaise that we're in right now of kind of stagflation, if you will, I think may be starting to wear on people's psyche. You also, looking at the University of Michigan one-year inflation expectations, May preliminary number came in at 4.5%, which was over the estimate of 4.4%. And that's a number the Fed looks at and they care about that. And if this is what's in the mind of people in the market, 4.5 is a real losing number. And I think that caused some of the bearish action we saw in the tape today. Looking at the University of Michigan 5 to 10 year inflation expectations, that was 3.2%, which was over the estimate as well. And that's kind of an unacceptable level. Unless the Fed's going to change their target, that really needs to come down. So I think a mixed bag this week with CPI coming in line, PPI looking positive, but then the University of Michigan looking kind of negative. And that rounds out this week's macroeconomic data.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully not more inflation to come, given the fact that you're invoking Carter and the malaise speech there with regards to the inflation expectations there. But it is one of those data points that did seem to spook Jerome Powell a few sessions back. What I'm referring to here is that 5 to 10 year inflation expectations from the University of Michigan that you just covered there, Eric. But it does seem to be at a little bit of a cycle high here. So it is higher, just when I was pulled up the Bloomberg chart just now, it is higher than at any point since, let's just call it since 2020 or so, from the kind of the lowest part. So we'll see what he makes of it and if he brings it up in the June meeting there. But with that, let's kick it off to the topic of the week. And for the topic of the week, it's been something that people have been talking about. It's certainly something that Powell did bring up during the last press conference as well. It is the Senior Loan Officer Opinion Survey on Bank Lending Practices. That's the long name. It's better known, I suppose, lately by its acronym. It's a curious acronym here. It's called SLOOS, S-O-S-L-O-O-S. But admittedly, it's a new acronym for me, but for the most part, the data that underlies it is something that has really been a mainstay in Double Line's macroeconomic toolkit for a long time. So it's something that we're well familiar with in terms of some of the underlying data prints that come out here, but just the acronym is somewhat new here, but I've been hearing it thrown around a lot. And we thought we'd give it a whirl for this week's topic of the week. But overall, the way that we use it within our macro toolkit is, I think that, you know, particularly when it comes to that commercial and industrial lending component, that C&I component there that is reported there with regards to lending standards to businesses and whether or not they're getting tighter or looser over time. We find it as a useful indicator for economic health, financial conditions, and it's also been a good leading indicator for future defaults in parts of the corporate credit market. So, Eric, you know this, you're well aware that we look at this indicator in our weekly macroeconomic or our macro meetings, and we compare it to historical default rates in U.S. corporate credit. Today, as I'm going to steal a little bit of your thunder here, Eric, but today, the primary indicator that we look at shows that 46% of net respondents for that survey question reported tighter lending standards for loans to medium and large size firms. And those medium and large size firms are defined by the Fed as those businesses with annual sales in excess of $50 million per annum. So what this does is when we take a look at this chart and overlaying it relative to the U.S. high yield corporate default rate, this implies a rise in the default rate on high yield from a current level where we are today. I'm just looking at this chart of around 2% today to an applied rate of around 8% over the next 12 months or so, because the lending conditions do, lending standards rather, for to be more specific, do tend to lead seem to lead the high yield default rate by about 12 months or so. And just looking at this chart outside of the pandemic, and recall during the pandemic, that was a time when both the Fed via monetary policy, as well, you know, via their backstop on some of these corporate bonds, as well as the fiscal authorities versus via the cash spray that they put out, when they stepped in during the pandemic, they did halt some of the default rate there. But outside of that pandemic period, anytime lending standards tend to get around 50 to 60% of the net respondents reporting tighter standards, it's had led historically to a wave of corporate credit defaults in the high yield space of 10% or higher. And this is looking at a chart going back to 1990. So it is something that we are paying close attention to, as it is getting close to that level. It is already getting to that level where we have started to see the trend pick up alongside corporate default rates, albeit from a very low level on the corporate default rates, where they're just hovering around zero to, again, just a little bit over 2% today. As I indicated before, many of you probably have seen the SLUs mentioned in the headlines. You've heard me and you, as well as Mayberry, talk about on M3 when it comes to the tightening of lending conditions. So we thought this is something that Jerome Powell and the FOMC looks at when they're determining monetary policy. So we wanted to dig in a little bit into this episode of Monday Morning Minutes. But first, let me set some more background here on what the SLUs actually is. And the SLUs is, it's a survey that's really been conducted by the Board of Governors at the Federal Reserve going back to 1964. And when you look at their website, it says that today they have authority to conduct this survey. I didn't know they needed the authority, but the authorities, if memory serves, it's given to them by the OMB, which stands for the Office of Management and Budget. But they do have this authority to conduct a survey up to six times a year. It's typically been conducted about four times a year going back to 1992 on a quarterly basis. They say quarterly, but I see that the release dates are, it's typically month end on January for the data point, as well as April, and then July, and then November there. But we've noted in past episodes that of the data that the Fed gets an early look on, this is one of them. The most recent April survey that was released to the general public came out on May 8th. But as I mentioned before, Jerome Powell had talked about it at the most recent presser. So they do get the early look just in time for the discussions at the relevant FOMC meetings. And I'll note that the survey is voluntary, but the universe of respondents that they have currently can potentially be up to 80 large domestically chartered commercial banks, as well as 24 large branches and agencies that are residing in the US of foreign banks. And the qualifications that stand out to me, among other things, are the banks and the respondents themselves have to have a minimum size of $2 billion in total assets at the bank, and greater than 5% of total assets of those total assets need to be in commercial and industrial loans. And the purpose of the survey is primarily to provide information on the availability of bank credit, as well as the demand of said credit from banks. So on both sides of the picture from where the bank stands. And then they also have questions around special topics that may be pertinent to current issues. So certainly lending conditions during the pandemic would have been a special topic. Some of the issues that we're seeing now with the banking stress, particularly at the regional bank level, would also, I presume, be a current issue as well that they'd be interested in having a special topic on. But all in all, there is, per the Fed, they say there's approximately 25 questions on each one of these surveys, and it's estimated to take the respondents to, and this is estimated provided by the Fed, saying that it should take them about 2 hours. The idea of 25 questions itself is kind of misleading. I would more or less categorize them as broader categories, 25 categories that they want the respondents to answer, because there are a lot of sub-questions for various categories there. And those sub-questions do seem to reflect issues that, again, are pertinent to current conditions on top of those special topic questions that we talked about before. But all in all, it seemed like there were maybe 75 to 100 type questions out of that approximately 25 questions cited by the Fed there. So I guess I would characterize it as perhaps 25 standardized questions with follow-up questions to dig in deeper and get a better sense of the sentiment of, amongst these senior loan officers related to current events. And these standard sections are really carved out and related to lending practices to by the banks to businesses as well as households. And then within the business section, they fall into two categories. I mentioned before, there's the medium and large businesses, which is one category. And again, that's defined as those businesses that have in excess of 50 million of sales annually. And then the ones that are below the 50 million in sales are considered small firms, which is the second category. And then in the most recent survey, these sections combined both the businesses, including the medium and large, as well as the small, as well as the households, that comprised about 26 questions. And that was roughly split between that business and household category. And then there were an additional 4 questions on special topics there. So that's the background of what the SLUS is. We decided that we'd break out some of the survey results and, you know, what we're seeing in terms of those questions and those categories. Dahl, you know, let me hand it over to you. You could talk about the lending to business section and give our listeners a feel for what that involved.
Yeah, for sure. And we don't want to bore you guys to death with 100, you know, dry bank questions. You know, I'm not going to go through these one by one. I mean, it is interesting when you look at them, because some of these questions could be controversial. You know, would somebody want to answer and say that they're tightening lending standards because they're worried about their bank? You know, they might be incentivized to say no there for cynical reasons, you know, just to not look like a weak hand. But that said, I think on a broad basis, the lending to businesses for C&I loans of all sizes for this first quarter of 2023 was tightened. And I think last week we talked about Jerome Powell's, you know, getting the early look on this. Well, you could kind of hear it in his responses to some of the questions. Not only is the Federal Reserve tightening the federal funds rate, but we talked about that trifecta of the federal funds rate, quantitative tightening, and tightened lending conditions because of bank stress. And that tightening was mostly reported on premiums charged to riskier loans and spreads on loans to cover the cost of funds, which makes sense in this higher rate environment. You really had, when the banks were asked why they did this, and most of the reasons that they gave were related to uncertain economic outlook, which everybody's trying to understand if the recession's going to happen, what type of recession it's going to be. But there is a lot of economic uncertainty, reduced tolerance for risk, and worsening industry-specific problems. I think that the rate volatility we've seen in the markets is also indicative of just this uncertainty for credit and loans. So another thing that was broken out in there is, how is demand for loans? Well, the demand had actually decreased in the first quarter. So I think credit conditions in the U.S., if you were to summarize, are getting tighter. And that's definitely going to be putting the squeeze on firms in terms of their activities. Another subsection of the lending to businesses was questions about commercial real estate lending. And as you could expect, over the first quarter, major net shares of the banks reported tightening standards for all types of CRE loans. And that tightening was more widely reported by mid-sized banks, which fits the narrative we're hearing out there and we're seeing on the tape by the bloodless verdict of the market. These kind of mid-sized banks are getting pounded, and they might be tightening their belts, really putting a magnifying glass on new loans and raising the cost to companies looking to take those loans. So I think that the general sense of this report when it pertains to lending to businesses was tightening conditions, and firms thought that conditions were either going to stay as tight as they are or tighten further as the year goes on. And naturally, there will be two more reports, as Sam mentioned, later this year. But right now, banks are tightening the belt. And I think that's kind of reflected throughout the report.
Yeah, I mean, they're not only tightening the belt to businesses, as you allude to there, but also to the households. And the household section is, as I mentioned, half of the standardized questions, if you will. But the questions in the household section they're largely related to lending standards within two categories, two broad categories. The first is residential mortgages and home, and within there, they also include home equity lines of credit. But for the mortgage part, they break out mortgages by type as well when they're going into the various sub questions there. They break it out by government issued loans, either through the the FHA or the VA, as well as GSE eligible. That's government sponsored entities. So that's your Fannie and your Freddie's. Those loans are eligible for those agencies, as well as they also cover qualified and non-qualified mortgages. So it's pretty comprehensive in terms of the types of questions where they break it out for these banks. The second category that they cover there is loans that are to consumers that are non-mortgage related. So things like auto, student, personal loans, which also have kind of a predetermined repayment path. They call those the installment loans. But then also within there, they'll include revolving credit like credit cards. But in terms of what we saw in the most recent survey, banks reported that the lending standards to households were similar to what you just reflected in the business side. To households, they're also tighter over the last quarter across residential mortgages. The exception here is those government-related, so the GSE eligible and then the VA type loans. Those were largely unchanged in terms of the lending standards. But for those non-government related mortgage loans, those saw roughly a 15 to 20% net respondents indicating that they had tightened lending standards over the past 3 months. Depending again within that loan category there of either jumbo, non-QM or non-QM that are non-jumbo, along with a host of other mortgage types that aren't government guaranteed there. But similar to those lending standards that we've seen in loans to businesses, this percentage of that 15 to 20% net respondents tightening has been steadily increasing since mid-2021. Within there, from the other side of the table, the demand side for the residential loan categories, it's not too surprising here, but the survey points to continued weaker demand there as well. It's not surprising. Also, kind of the start time, because it started to rise again in the middle of 2021. And if you recall, that's the period of time where mortgage rates really went from the all-time lows, where they're below 3% on a national level, national average, below 3% mortgage rates on a 30-year fixed. And in very short order, they went to north of 7% on the back of the Fed tightening cycle there. So with this, I guess it's not surprising at all to see that weaker demand combined with some of this home price appreciation that we've seen since the pandemic as well. When it came to consumer loans, we saw a similar theme there. We saw of the bank respondents, 30% net respondents signal tighter standards there as well. And on the demand side, auto and other consumer loans were weaker, but the demand from the credit side was largely unchanged. So overall, a little bit of a mixed bag there with regards to what we're seeing in consumer loans. Overall, I would say with the mortgage side on a net basis, it does seem like things did get tighter as well. But with that, Eric, let me pass it back to you to finish us off with the special topics section and what you saw there.
Yeah. So the special questions on banks' reasons for changing standards and outlooks is the kind of Fed speak for these special questions. And ultimately, they were asking why the most banks were tightening standards for businesses and for households. And the major reasons cited were less favorable or more uncertain economic outlook, which we've already discussed. And on top of that, a reduced tolerance for risk, deterioration in collateral values, and concerns about funding costs and liquidity positions, which all make sense in the context of what we've seen with the Federal Reserve raising rates very aggressively over the past year to fight inflation. And in compared to the largest banks, the mid-sized banks also cited concerns regarding their liquidity positions, deposit outflows, and funding costs. And I mean, once again, pretty obvious, we've seen bank failures, especially in the middle and smaller bank area, and there's still banks under stress in that market segment. So I think the survey is useful, but the reasons are kind of somewhat as expected, I would say. There was also a set of special questions asking about the lending standards for the rest of the year. And I kind of already alluded to that, but most of the banks think that on balance, conditions are going to remain as tight or tighter for the rest of this year. So I think people have to really accept that. The market has been hoping that the Fed's going to loosen and it's going to lead to looser money conditions. But I think credit conditions in the United States are likely to stay tight for at least the next quarter, two quarters. We'll see how things play out with the bloodless verdict of the market. But it's a tight credit market right now out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So overall, I mean, you know, as we like to do here on Monday Morning Minutes, just give you an indication of what type of macroeconomic data that we like to look at to help us at DoubleLine get a sense of where we are in the economic cycle, how things look within financial conditions. And within the SLOOS, again, the Senior Loan Officer Opinion Survey, it contains at least one indicator here that we've been looking at for quite a while when we look at it relative to credit conditions. And given where we are at with regards to the tightening of lending standards to medium and large businesses, again, it's just north of 45% of the respondents on a net basis reporting the tighter conditions over the last 3 months, we would expect higher default rates and high yield corporate credit. So that's one of the things that we look at. Again, it's just one indicator. It's not to say that this is our firm view that we expect it to go this way. But historically speaking, going back to 1990, when you look at this chart, it does imply that the trend for the default rate and high yield corporate credit, you know, absent anything other factors, is that it will be trending to perhaps a high single digit, if not double digit type of default rate that we would see over the course of the next 10 to 12 months. So it's just something that we consider when we're making all of our decisions with regards to asset allocation within, you know, not only the fixed income side, but just over holistically on a broader asset cross asset allocation perspective as well. So hopefully listeners found this topic useful and a little bit interesting. But with that, Dahl, do you want to kick us off on the things to keep an eye on next week from the macro front?
Absolutely. So fortunately, next week, we get a little bit of a breather when it comes to macroeconomic data, pretty light week. But the key days to look at are Tuesday and Thursday, pretty much the only days in town. So on Tuesday, May 16th, we get retail sales, the advanced month over month number for April. And that's estimated to come in at 0.8%, which is a pretty nice bounce back from the prior of -0.6%. We'll see what the actual print is and look at the details, because that will really matter. We also get the retail sales ex auto and gas, which the estimate is positive 0.2%. Once again, an increase of 0.5% from the prior. And we get the retail sales control group for April, which is predicted to come in at 0.4% positive, which is an increase of 0.7% from the prior. So kind of rosy estimates. We'll see if that's the truth or if that's just guesses, optimistic guesses. Also on the 16th, on Tuesday, we get industrial production month over month for April. Estimates zero. So the prior was 0.4. So I would say that's kind of a bearish estimate. We have the capacity utilization for April also coming out. Estimate 79.7. Very similar to the prior of 79.8. And we have on Thursday, the initial jobless claims, which was a little higher this week. We'll see if it's a little higher next week as well. The estimate's 250,000. So estimated decline, we'll see what the print is. Similarly, with continuing claims, we have an estimate of 1,815,000, right in that 1.8 million handle. So steady as she drifts there. And finally, we get the leading economic indicators for April, which has been incredibly bearish. I mean, that's been screaming recession signal with the year over year metric at 7.8. And if the estimate of minus 0.6% is correct, that will replace a minus 0.6% that's rolling off, leaving the year over year at minus 7.8. So we'll see. The prior number for LEI was minus 1.2. So maybe it's bottoming, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. I mean, at these levels here, we've remarked in the past that looking again, just, you know, blindly at these charts, it just looks like at this point of negative 7.8 on the year over year basis that historically, we have already been indicated that we would have been in an economic recession or contraction, you know, as determined by the National Bureau of Economic Research. But thanks for that wrap up on the macro front, though. I think that sets us up for this week on Monday Morning Minutes. Wanted to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks to all you listeners out there. Really appreciate your time. Hopefully this adds value, gives you perspective on the markets here on Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up the latest episode each Monday before the bell or live on Twitter Spaces. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Hit us up on Twitter at DL Minutes. Send us your questions for the topic of the week or any other thing that's on your mind, markets related. Or you can send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, you can also find out more about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/doubleline capital. Most recently, over this past week, we posted a Sherman Show episode with JP Morgan's Michael Feroli. Also, we have a PS Perspective episode where our product specialists talk about their current views in fixed income and how we may think about positioning within fixed income here based on our outlook. And then also we have a new episode of Channel 11 with Kenny Shinoda. And then additionally, we have a new white paper from our portfolio manager, Bill Campbell. You can find that on doubleline.com where he discusses his views on the US dollar. And don't forget to follow Jeff Sherman and me on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Thanks, everyone. Hope everyone has a good week and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.